Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Welcome to episode number one, Starting a Dental Practice, Where to Start. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tron. Hello, Han. How are you?
Good evening, everyone. I am marvelous. How is everyone this evening?
Excellent. I know today in Ohio we have some of the most beautiful weather we've had in quite a while. 78 degrees, little breeze, partly sunny, and low humidity. Couldn't ask for anything better. Well,
that just sounds like every day in St. Pete, Florida, Jim. I'm glad you have some of it.
Don't rub it in. Exactly. Well, tonight's show we're extremely excited about because it begins the real in-depth discussion of dental practice design issues. And obviously, as before, if you'd like to call in and ask either Han or myself a question, that number is 657-383-1442. Please feel free at any time to call in during today's show, and we'll get you onto the board. And as Han very astutely pointed out in our previous show, don't worry, you don't have to give your real name. We're okay with that. You can be as anonymous as you'd like if you would like to. And again, today's show is getting started, starting the dental practice. Now, Han and I have heard so many times through the years as doing this, the first question is asked is, where do I start and who do I call? Well, the simple, short answer to that is call us. But we're okay with you talking to other people as well. And we're really going to have an in-depth discussion about the aspects and areas of where we want to deal with and how you want to begin developing your dental facility. Now, there's a outlined step process that we've put together. You can go to our website at www.hjtdesign.com and download the construction guideline book for free. It's an in-depth booklet that allows you to review each one of these aspects that we're going to be talking about tonight, plus a whole bunch of other information. So it's a very valuable and useful tool. Within that, you'll find the steps that we use and utilize in putting together a dental facility. Now, everybody, Han, we've talked about this before. Everybody that begins this process really starts at a different place. Wouldn't you say?
Yes. Oh, hey, Jim, you forgot to mention that manual that's on our website. It's free of charge.
Yeah, that's correct.
So download away.
Yeah. So everybody works, they start at a different point within the process, but eventually, you have to check off every one of the boxes that are in this process list. So I wanted to start off today's show very quickly about going through those steps, and then we're going to have a very in-depth discussion about one of the particular steps, which has to do with the program planning or the beginning of the process. But step number one is team building. Now, team building is a crucial step that needs to set your foundation. And we're going to have actually probably a future show that talks directly about how to properly and And to create that team, you're going to need to know the individuals that are part of this, their core individuals, things like the bank lender, your accountant, your attorney, dental specialist, equipment specialist, construction entities. There's just quite a few that have to be integrated as your team to help you set yourself up to succeed. The second step is program planning, which we'll have a very in-depth discussion here shortly once I get through the step list. Third step is what we consider schematic design. That's when we actually start to create concepts and designs, as we said before, in virtual reality on the computer, and that is the beginning process of the designing of your facility. The next step is design development. And most people say, well, wait a minute, didn't you just design it in schematic? Actually, in reality, no. Design development is when you answer all of the questions that Han and I are going to come up with. And those questions are going to be things like, what do you want to put on the floor in this particular area? And we'll have detailed discussions on why you would want to do this or why you'd want to do that and what lives the longest. We've had a lot of reviews on materials, colors, and those kind of selections. So we develop that design to the point then we then start what's called the blueprints, construction documents, the things that most people think that's what the architect does. Well, it's just one of many, but construction documents are where we create those drawings that your construction team member is going to take. They're going to give you a solid bid price from it. We're going to give it to the building official and they're going to review it for code compliance. And then they will, meaning the construction entity, will build from that to create your facility. Bidding and negotiation is the next step, is where we integrate our expertise along with the construction entities to allow them to bid everything out. We help you review it, help the negotiation process, so that you basically get the very best bang for your dollar and that you are utilizing individuals in the trades that are the right individuals. Han, how many times have we seen where the wrong individual is trying to do a particular task, they bite off more than they could chew?
Too often.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the whole process, I guess there's a old saying that under promise, over deliver. And unfortunately, in our field, there's an awful lot of too much promise and not enough delivery. And it's our job to we have to do our best to find the right fit for the right price. Often that in that bidding process, we don't always go for the cheapest because we find that the cheapest is not always necessary the best and right fit for the project. But we can go into that more detail in future episodes so that you get all the nuts and bolts of what happened in those processes.
Exactly. There are just so many areas that need to be covered and discussed. The good thing about it is we do this show every week, so it gives us an opportunity to really discuss all of these areas in depth. The next step is construction. That's actually when they do start the build from beginning to end, and then that finalizes itself into what's called move-in and occupancy. You have to plan for that. There are a lot of steps that have to be adjusted. You have to properly position yourself to be able to hit that move-in date so that typically we like to see you're working in your existing facility till Friday. Monday morning, new patients, new location, new facility, everything's up and running. That's when it really works smoothly and unbelievably exciting. Well, let's go back to program planning, step number two. And as we said before, if you have a question and would like to call in, please feel free. That number is 657-383-1442. So under the program planning, Han, I'll let you start out with a discussion of, I guess we want to start out with the business plan.
Yeah, I think before we start to talk the nuts and bolts of what to do with the building, what to design, there's an awful lot of decision that that you as the business owner, the dentist, have to make. It could be as simple as where do you live? Where do you want to live? That's a very personal decision. It depends on your lifestyle. You may want to be in a part of the country that allow you to enjoy the water almost every day of the year, like in Florida, outdoor activities that involve in snow. Your lifestyle, your family life, do you plan on have family? So all those things need to be thought out. Of course, you need to plan on that because it would be a shame to move to a location or build a practice in a town or a part of the country that you hate being in. Okay, you can make a ton of money, but you hate being there. It'll be miserable. So business planning would be involved in you planning to practice by yourself as a solo practitioner. How big of a practice, the type of procedures and specialties that you're going to do yourself, or you're going to take on partners. Is it going to be a big group practice and things like that? So ultimately, what do you want to do in terms of your practice? How big, how small, and things of that nature. So that should be, you should give it some, a lot of time in planning that.
I'd like to interject just a little bit in that we actually ask that our client creates what we call a program in this step. And that is actually where you take and write this stuff down. We have a very lengthy questionnaire that helps to begin that process, that helps you as the doctor go in, fill it out, and begin to ask yourself those kind of questions. That program plan is vital, so that you have that in front of you as we begin to move through all of these decision-making processes. And you could be, this pertains to someone who has two or three practices and locations and wants to expand to a fourth or a fifth. This could be a startup individual who just came out of school and wants to start up their very first practice. This could be someone that says, okay, I'm the solo practitioner today. I want to renovate and expand and add two or three associates. It works and is germane to all of those individuals, not just somebody who, for example, came out of school and wants to start up their very first practice. Han?
Yeah, I think in terms of the type of practice that you want to build, for instance, in short term, we have clients that say, I want to do my startup and I only want this much real estate to deal with, and I plan to be here for 5, maybe 10 years, saved up enough cash to build the dream office that I want. And so, you have to identify and understand what it is that you want in short term, and then ultimately the long term, what it is that you want out of your practice. Now, we're not CPA or a financial planner or anything like that, where we can help you with early retirement. But Dr. Hunsinger, I'm quite sure he can sit down and walk you through that with ease. But in discussion about buildings and physical aspect of your design and stuff like that, we can certainly talk all day long. So, but in planning your building, it's still the short term of what you need spatial-wise, as well as the long-term. So that way, in the design process, it can be done expediently, correctly, so that it reduces a lot of headache as you grow. And so I think we covered some of the aspect of where you want to practice and where you live and things like that. So when you're starting out, some actually dive in and buy their real estate, buy a building, buy land, and build new. That's a pretty small percentage. Most of our clients start out with leasing property or leasing space and grow from there. But you have to sit down with a financial planner or a financial consultant to discuss that what you can afford and how you'll be able to tackle paying the note, whether it's right for you to lease or right for you to own. So that's a discussion you should have before we get into the designing aspect of it. And you may want to also sit down and figure out what you can afford, really what you can afford. Don't go and I don't think it's wise to go and try to impress too many folks of what you have that will strap you down. So establish a realistic budget that you can live with, because after all, when you start out of school, you may want to start a family. You have a good size note for your education. Building a practice would add more debt onto that, and so you just have to make sure that you build what you can actually pay for comfortably.
Exactly correct, Han, and that is an area of expertise that Dr. Hunsinger brings to our organization. Bill will be able to very quickly, by looking at your existing practice, if you're an individual who has a practice that's been in place for a while, he'll be able to look at a few numbers and give you recommendations on what needs to be done, what you need to be producing, and how you need to set yourself up to be in a position to take on this new facility, and then also be in a position to take on the added load that you're going to get. We historically find that after opening a new facility, be it a renovation, be it a new build, whatever it is, you theoretically will see a 20 to 25% increase in your patient load almost overnight. And that's because we historically have found that people are just naturally drawn to something that's new. And because of that, you get an opportunity to experience that growth. Then it's up to you to keep those individuals in your practice as your patients, and along with setting yourself up to be able to provide them the service that is the best around, that's an easy recipe for a very successful practice. You just imagine taking your existing practice right now and adding 20 to 25% to it overnight. It's an exciting, but at the same time, somewhat scary situation for some individuals, some doctors. How do you handle that with your staff? All those kind of things are where Bill's expertise and knowledge will be very useful in putting together your plan. And again, that's all written out and reviewed in the program plan booklet so that you have it there in place. Your goal is, by the time we're done with the program planning, this initial step number two, you have a very thorough understanding of what needs to be done, what you need to do, what your design professionals need to do, what your other team members need to do, and the processes that they have to go through and their particular steps. So it becomes a organized, systematic, 1, 2, 3 kind of dance that we go through item by item, piece by piece, and check off the boxes. Get to the point when we're done, you have a successful practice that is what you and your staff and your patients really can experience and enjoy. Now, one of the areas that Han had brought out there was having to do with the practice and where you'd like to live. And one little tidbit of information that we always like to bring out to our clients is that there is a formula. That formula is 90% of appointments are made by the wife or woman of the household. And yeah. those appointments are for herself, her children, and her husband or significant other. Now, with that, where do they congregate? What we like to establish is if you could have a facility that's located beside the bank or adjacent to the grocery store, the school, the gas station, those high traffic areas are where you'd like to be positioned. That is crucial for setting out a facility location. And we find that if you can check off as many of those boxes as possible, the more that you have checked off, the higher your probability of being in a successful location. Because in the dental practice world, location is crucial. We know that you're a destination client, meaning once people know where you're at, they're going to come to you because you have great service. Let's assume you have a great staff. Everything is wonderful. Once they've got in the door and once they've met you and your staff and once they see what you can do for them and how you can help them out, that's not the problem. The problem is getting them to that point. Now, if you have to market like crazy because you're stuck off in some little nook in the corner of a particular city with no exposure, that's a recipe for disaster. The better recipe is to be in that high traffic locale with the visibility so that you have an attractive facility. Again, that newer facility that people are naturally drawn to go see, well, what's that all about? Let's go see what that's like. All of those things help to get you to that point of that 20 or 25% increase when you open that new facility. And Han brought out the aspect of lease and own. Well, we're going to have a complete show on the whole aspect of lease and own. We're going to have guest hosts, interviews with some experts that'll talk about the particulars of what it's like to lease something, what it's like to own something, what are the advantages and disadvantages of both. That'll be coming up in one of our future episodes. And then the last thing we talked about, of course, was budget. Budget is crucial to the success of this whole process. And you really need to take all the expertise from the individual team members that we're going to talk about in next week's show to be able to develop that budget so that you are prepared. Construction is probably one of the most expensive things that you're going to get involved in. Operatory equipment is expensive. Now, obviously, we all know if you're doing well, you should be able to produce $25,000 to $30,000 a month out of one operatory. Isn't that the number, Han?
Yep.
Correct. And so, obviously, simple math is the more operatories, the better you are on a month-to-month basis. But at the same time, what's it cost to build that operatory? And you could spend thousands and thousands of dollars on building one type of operatory versus less money on other operatory. Just depends on what you put in it and how it's configured. We'll help you through that process. But there's other aspects of a building And that has to do with the orientation. It has to do with the site location. It has to do with things you will never see. It has to do with the foundation. Foundations can be extremely inexpensive, or they can be ungodly expensive, depending on what kind of property you have. If you're building a new facility, there are some areas that have been filled with garbage, as we put it, junk fill over the years that are totally unsuitable to build a building on top of. So you have to dig down below all that stuff to get down to suitable soil to put in a foundation. Well, that cost quite a lot of money as opposed to another property that is stable, has a good soil bearing pressure, clean, and effectively you can build a very shallow foundation system that only has to go down to frost level if you're in a cold climate, or like where Han's at, you don't even have to go down to basically a foot and a half just to get below the soil there. And, you know, you could build a facility based on that. Those two opposites are the opposite extremes in construction costs. And that adds up very quickly. So we evaluate that and help in the process of when you're looking at site selection. And again, we're going to talk about that with one of our experts having to do with site selection. It's crucial. I guess the bottom line here, Han, is it's never too early to talk to us and integrate us into this process, because that kind of knowledge will help you as the dentist and the owner of this new facility to make the educated decision on which should I do, parcel A or parcel B. Well, parcel B is, you know, 10 times less than parcel A. Yeah, but it's going to cost you so much more to build a particular foundation on that. So you need to have that information up front before you sign on the dotted line. We've gotten so many clients that have come to us after they've already bought the facility and said, help me out. Well, the opportunity is lost when they've already signed on the bottom line.
That's where you say there is a proactive way to do it, and then there is a reactive way to do it. When you consider a piece of property, a site, whether it's an existing space in the retail strip, that's when before you sign a dotted line, that's when you engage in a conversation with your design professional to see and do a feasibility study. That's what we call it. It's not a Bakken diagram. It's not a bubble diagram. A feasibility study will give you most of the nuts and bolts for you to determine whether it will work for you, not may work for you, it will work for you or not. And that way you can commit yourself to move forward with a lease or a purchase confidently. Too often we are presented with with the opportunity where the property have already been leased or the building have been bought or purchased, and the due diligence have not been done, and they, the owner, the new owner, the dentist, purchased himself a set of a problem that no money can solve. Okay, for instance, we have a project that we were involved in, we were invited to the table after the fact. It was designed by a supply company. The layout client, for the client at that time, she ended up purchasing the property, and then we were presented with the design. Of course, everybody say, well, the architects will work out all the problems. We can do some magic, but not all of it. In this case, the building, the proposal for the design was an expansion to both sides of the building. The unfortunate part is that the expansion will straddle the neighbor's property. That is one of the probably the worst, if not the top three worst scenario that you can find yourself in after you commit to the lease and or purchase. In this case, it was a purchase. We were able to work out the rework the design and came up with the solutions needed. But again, it's being proactive, early on would be the approach. Ask your question, do your research, collect information, ask more questions, collect more information, do more research. That way you have most of the answers that you need, that you're comfortable with, before you commit yourself to a location and signing on for the note or whether the lease for 5 years, 10 years or 20 years. And let me just back up on one item on the budget that we talked about earlier. I kid often that there's two things that we have very little control over. And if anybody tells you that they can control that, please run away from them as fast as you can. One is time. We can only do so much to control that. But on a project, I think it would be wise to be realistic. Every project, it will take more time than you plan. Secondly, in terms of budget, in terms of money, often it takes more money than you like to spend. So when you look at your schedule, do give yourself a little bit of breathing room so that even if you want to open it on Monday, the day after you close the previous office on Friday, things happen. It's not maybe. Things will always happen, and you want to have that little bit of room to adjust to it. So that includes your schedule. It includes your money. So make sure that you, whatever the budget is, don't spend all of it. Have some of it take some of it aside for the contingencies, because when things happen, you want to have the resource to solve it so that you can move forward rather than figure out what you have to sell, what you have to pawn to finish the job. I'm not kidding about that. I've seen it happen.
Basically, hindsight is 2020, but obviously, why reinvent the wheel? Go through. We have the processes. We've done this so many times for so many clients successfully. We'll help you and guide you through that along with our team members to be able to set you really up to succeed so you don't have to deal with those emergencies and those at least minimize them to the point of causing a catastrophe with your new thing. You're right. Hans, you're exactly right. Set yourself up. Have a contingency in there so that if something were to come up and you needed another $5,000, the contractor comes to you and says, we couldn't get this particular product because it went out of supply, but we can get this product, but it's in a $5,000 upcharge. You're able to handle that, and you're okay with that, as opposed to, oh, crap. Now I've got to write a check out of my bank account because the bank won't loan me any more money because I'm maxed out into where I set my construction budget. Any good financial institution is going to mandate that you have a contingency within your budget when you put together a program for an expansion, whether it's a small expansion, whether it's a interior build out of a lease space, or whether it's a brand new build. It's just the numbers get bigger. And
yeah,
another thing about construction is very, very easy to spend a lot of money very quickly. Construction is an expensive endeavor. We're talking about things that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And in a heartbeat, you can drop $100,000 on one particular system or make a decision. Let's say you decided to use this mechanical system over that mechanical system, meaning the air conditioning, heating, and ventilation. That decision could be $100,000 difference just between A and B. That all needs to be evaluated. And that's one of the things that is done throughout this process so that you can determine what's the best solution for you and what fits within your budget. The old adage is that you've got time, you've got cost, and you've got quality. Pick two, because you never can get three. And actually, that's very true, because you're never going to get a scenario, and if somebody tells you they can give you all three, like Hans said, run fast, because it doesn't exist. Because construction takes time. Quality construction takes more time.
More time.
And expenses, cost, effective cost, take time and energy to design properly so that you can set yourself up to succeed. You can't just lop together something and expect it to be the most efficient design system that you can then have a contractor build. Because if they have questions when they look at a set of drawings, or if they have questions when they're putting their price together, what they do to cover themselves is they add dollars to their bid. So if you don't have a detailed, thorough, prepared set of documents for your construction entity team member to price around, the numbers will just be larger than what they really need to. We have found that it's very crucial that you have a very detailed set of documents that they can bid from, and that'll minimize those guesses. We call them the fudge
factors. You'll manage it. Yeah, you manage it.
It'll minimize it because they have to cover themselves. We'll have a whole discussion coming up as to your construction delivery method. And one of the ones that we like to advocate is utilizing a construction manager from the beginning of the process so that he's an integral team member from day one. That is another way to help minimize your unknown costs and for them to help be part of the decision-making processes. Because on a day-to-day basis, we as designers and architects don't know what it costs to put up a sheet of drywall on a day-to-day basis, because it changes literally that quickly. I had a discussion just the other day with a good friend of mine who's an estimator for a local builder here in town. He said literally once he submitted his price on a project, and they typically give 90 days for the owner to make a decision to move forward, he has seen three material cost increases in that 90 days. I mean, it's a scary situation out there from a builder standpoint of what they have to do and be in a position to deliver what they promised and put together. So you need a quality individual who knows what they're doing to be able to circumvent that. Construction costs are going up. The economy is getting better. Go ahead.
Labor is getting scarce.
Very.
Which means that it costs more for labor. Jim, let me add two items to the discussion before we get too far and lost in it. The contingency doesn't always have to be used for emergency. And I've seen it done a couple of times. Let's say you have the contingency and the project's going well, and you want to splurge a little bit. You know, you took a trip and you found some Italian marbles that you just absolutely must have. If you have that money in the contingency, you can upgrade your projects. Okay, it's a nice luxury to have, but it doesn't always have to be something that are bad. The other item that Jim was talking about, system that could cost, you know, you can spend $100,000 easy. One item that can come to my mind really quick, it's called an elevator. It becoming more common now where a dental office, particularly if you have a basement or a second level, some municipality will require for you to put in an elevator. If that is something that are known up front, then you can budget for it. If not, it will take a good bite into your budget. And it runs between $65,000 to $100,000. That's where you can spend $100,000.
Okay.
train.
Exactly. So. Exactly. You're exactly true. And then that goes back to the discussion of the property type. If you've got property A, which is rather flat, doesn't require you to have a multi-story facility or one that would be advantageous to multi-story. Let's say you have a desire to have a basement for storage, maybe put some of your toys in, boat, those kind of things. We have a client that asked us to do that. But at the same time, if you throw yourself into that scenario where now the municipality, and it's different from every location around the country, some require, some don't. There's no hard, fast rule. But if it is required, then if you have to put an elevator in, then that weighs on the discussion of, okay, property A is sloping, it's steep, I have to put, I can put in a two-story, basically a level facility up front with a walkout basement. Well, it sounds weird, but you may have to have an elevator. We've got a project in Chicago right now, in the Chicago region, that the doctor wanted to have a lower level, a pure basement used for storage, required an elevator. Now, that's $60,000 to $100,000 worth of cost that you have to sink into that decision. And then it goes to the question of size of property. Well, if you want to have so many thousand square feet, let's say you want to have 5,000 square feet, well, you can always do 2,500 square feet on first floor, 2,500 second, you get 5,000 feet and buy a smaller piece of property. But if you're required to have an elevator, you got to weigh that against a bigger piece of property where you can have it all on one level and no elevator. There's so many things to be addressed and to discuss and to talk about. We could go on all night long, couldn't we, Hon?
Yes. I mean, for architects and designer, we want the building to be as sexy as possible. All right. Who doesn't love sexy? However, the best shape for a dentist's office is, again, it's a rectangle. There's nothing cool about it. But it makes the most logical sense. It would yield you the best opportunity for the best usage of the square footage that you have. It would minimize cost in building. And so rectangle is the shape. When it comes to land, purchasing land, I guess it depends on what part of the country you're in, but a flat piece of land can be very beautiful. Okay, it doesn't add a lot of cost to rework it and stuff like that. For instance, we done a few projects in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is there's a lot of hills. So you buy a mountain and you go, I own that mountain, but you only have a plateau on top that may be half an acre of land that you can build on. That's a lot of property that you can't use. It's like buying 10-acre flat piece of land with 9.5 acres of it are wetland, which would be a shame unless you want to have, waterfront property and things like that. But the type of site is really important. It minimizes the amount of construction costs so that you don't throw all of it in working with the land. Because it doesn't have to do with the building, but it does affect the way the building is designed and built, and that it certainly will add cost to the building unnecessarily. If the topo is crazy, it's going to cost you crazy dollars to build it.
Okay. So to kind of wrap up this discussion. In regards to the where do I start, the simple answer is you need to start with your program. That program outlines all aspects of what you would like to try to accomplish. We call it the needs, wants, and desires. We definitely want to get your needs in there. We'd like to get your wants. And if your budget allows, get those desires in as well. It includes things like your business plan, your short-term and long-term goals, where you want to practice and where you want to like to live, if you're looking at a new facility in a new location, or looking at a new build in a different location to add to your two or three or four existing offices. Deal with the issues of own versus lease. Work out and have a budget established. And one thing we hadn't talked about, which is actually gone through in depth in our construction guideline book, which again you can download at our website, www.hjtdesign.com, is you're going to have to also look at number of operatories, your number of hygiene spaces, reception and business areas, sterilization, staff room, doctor's office, consult area, lab, parking. Parking is another big issue. It varies so much from location to location. Let's say you have a downtown location in a metropolitan area like Chicago, or it could be a small metropolitan area like a location in southern Ohio, where there literally is no parking in that property that you own. And all your patients have to park either on the street or in adjacent parking facilities. You have to look at those things and somehow make that work versus parking in a facility that, in a more rural location that has the ability to put 20, 30, or 40 parking spaces on. Obviously, when you look at staff, let's say you have a staff of 10, you're going to need 10 parking spaces. And then to be able to properly park for your operatory, let's say you have a 10 operatory facility. Well, that's, if everything's going properly, you will have that filled with 10 patients at one given time. That's 10 more parking spaces. Now, on top of that, if you properly schedule things, you're going to have another 10 patients lined up to come in directly after that patient is done. So in theory, you need another 10 parking spaces for those patients because your first patient's not out of the chair before your second patient comes into the parking lot. So that's 20 parking spaces. All of a sudden, we're up to 30 parking spaces for just a 10-op facility. That's going to be a lot more than what typical codes are going to require. So we'll go through all of that in future discussions. But I wanted to at least lay this out tonight in our discussion. With that, I would like to again throw out the offer that Han and I and Bill will be presenting at a conference in Chicago on Saturday, the 25th. If you'd like any information about that, you can go to www.weteachextractions.com. It is a 8-hour CE course. There'll be 11 topics on dentistry. We will not be the only people there. There will be a bunch of others that'll be talking about a variety of different topics. I believe the fee is about $414, and it's located right there at the Holiday Inn close to the airport, if I'm not mistaken, Han. Is that right?
Yeah. And your contact is Dr. Tommy Murphy.
So if you're in the area or would like to come and see us speak live, along with getting a few CE credits at the same time, more than welcome. See what we can do contacting them and signing up for that. Well, with that, we wanted to also talk about next week's show is going to be actually item number one from our step process, which is who do I need on my project team? This next week's episode is going to be an in-depth review and discussion about the team members, who they are, what they need to accomplish, and what they need to bring to you as the way of an expertise so that you can set yourself up to succeed. So we're excited about the opportunity to be able to talk about that next week. And
It's a good topic. It's a very good topic, to discuss, because with the right team, with the right level of expertise, it just makes your quality of your project that much more better and smoother.
Well, exactly. So. And most people have, well, most folks, most dentists have not done this before. So it's a very scary situation. And by putting the right team members in place, it allows you to take away that uncertainty, because these people are experts at what they do. You rely upon them and their knowledge. None of these facilities are our facilities. They're not mine personally or Hans or Bill's. They're yours. And our goal and role, along with the other team members, are to provide you the information so you can make the very best educated decision on what you want to do and move forward with that. We have at least a minimum of 7, but in reality, there's going to be over a dozen different team members that we're going to discuss. You may not need them all, but you're going to need a large portion of them. And it's important that you have those people on your side to help you make those kind of decisions. If not, you risk those construction issues that end up are very, very costly.
Let me throw this one in, Jim. I when you put together your team, there's no shame in being not the smartest guy, on the team. The whole objective is to surround yourself with intelligent, competent people to help you through the process. I think that would be the key. You don't have to be the brain at the helm. You just put together a team of people that are well seasoned, that you trust, and let them do their job, and that way they can carry you across that finish line on your project faster, better, more economical, with as few issue as possible. So you don't have to be the smartest one at the table, okay? There's no shame in that.
No. The smartest one at the table is the guy that asks for the advice, the guy or the gal, and,
yep.
and get that advice. And again, if you'd like to call in and ask a question, feel free. The number is 657-383-1442. Well, in the next 10 minutes or so, we have for our show, let's talk about a hot topic from Dentaltown. Han, what has been happening last week on Dentaltown, and what was one of the or two of the hot topics?
There was a discussion, and it involved in, I don't have all the detail, but I have a good sense of what's involved. Once in a while, we have a client that come and say, I have an opportunity at purchasing an older building, a historical building, and it's good visibility, and it's very I can pick it up for cheap. Sometimes it's often it may not be the wisest thing to do when you deal with buildings that in historic district. There's an awful lot of bureaucracy, a lot of red tape that you have to go through. A time that's involved in the construction, planning, design, and building process. We have a good idea what it takes. But when you interject or when you discover those historic buildings, it can throw that off, way off, sometime by month, sometime by year. In terms of money, sometimes it's a few thousand, sometimes it's hundreds of thousands. We have done a few historical rehab projects. Do take this into consideration. As architects and designers, I myself love buildings. I hate to see old buildings get torn down. But again, if you acquire a building that require for you to maintain the historical integrity of that building, you're going to be the one who who's going to write the check to upkeep all of that aesthetic and that historic value. You're going to be the one that deal with all the headaches. What you can do, what you can't do, a lot of what you can't do. So by the time that you deal with that building, it could be, you can get a lot of gray hair. And in this case, it it is a historical building. They in those districts, they're very strict on even colors, any modification. It's very restrictive. So if you look at that kind of property, make sure you do a fair bit of research before you commit yourself to purchasing it, because buying it cheap doesn't mean the end result's going to be economical.
I've done in one of the offices that I was first working for when I got out of school, we did a large amount of historic restoration projects over in Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Harrisburg area. And those facilities are just absolutely, those historical buildings are just absolutely, phenomenal. They're gorgeous. They have a rich history to them, but Han is exactly correct. They also have a price tag attached to them. Depending on where they're at, depending on their infrastructure, depending on so many factors, whether it's a facility that's been upkept properly or whether it's one that's been allowed to decay. Buildings that are left vacant will begin to deteriorate so quickly. Most people don't understand that, but so quickly they will start to deteriorate. And when they do, it costs a lot of money to bring them back to life. So be very, very, very careful about jumping into a historic restoration or historic property without having an expert or at least someone who's knowledgeable do a review of that. We do that. Or find someone else in your area to do it. But please do that, because going into it blindly could be a very disastrous decision. Even though it is a historically gorgeous building, it may not be something that you would want to bite off in when it comes to the costs.
Yeah, sometimes some of the things that we encounter, let's say building is in historic district, but it's not necessarily on the historic registry. And you go, wouldn't that be cool to have this building on the historic registry? Well, of course it's nice to have the brag and right that it is on the historic registry, but the process to go through it will cost you. Once you accomplish getting on the registry, you can also go after historic grants. The historic grant is not a lot, but it's some money. That money comes with a pretty big long string attached, is that you can't do a lot to the building, even though it makes sense. For instance, some of the older building had huge windows, single pane, uninsulated, and they leak like a sieve. Historic money and registry do not allow you to replace those window with insulated units. As crazy as it sounds, those few $30,000, $50,000 or so, give or take, that are granted to you for rehabbing the building, you would just waste it away in a couple of years in utility bills, because the building are built, they're not the airtight, they're not well insulated, and those big windows will just suck the money out of it. It doesn't make sense, but if you get into or entertain that kind of a building opportunity, just be informed, because it could be a very rude surprises.
And then there's also systems available where you have you can take a internal storm window, if you want to call it, but an internal pane of glass and create a modified air pocket that way to help minimize some of that heat loss and heat gain through that historic window. But Hans is exactly right. You can't go in and tear out all these old 100-year-old windows and replace them with high-end efficiency new windows and still maintain your historic register classification. Or in some facilities, even if your building is not on the historic register, if it's in a historic district within a particular city or region, they have rules and regulations that say what you can and can't do to the outside of that building. And sometimes it goes all the way through to what you can do on the inside of the building. We did
encounter a project that included the interior. They want to see what you're doing inside as well as the outside.
Yeah, and so you really, really have to engage a design professional who knows what they're doing, has been down this road before, and it's not their first time at the rodeo. One would say that. Well, with that, Ron, was there anything else you wanted to add for tonight?
Yeah. Let me just take one more minute on that topic. Is that besides the building, the dealing with the municipality could be a really, really trying experience. So if you, I'm not trying to pick on anybody in particular. It's just a topic that if you're not prepared to embark on that, with all the issues associated with historic buildings and stuff like that, just make sure that you do enough research, to at least give you some idea what you're about to get into. Okay, that is all for me.
Yeah, and you have to evaluate what does that do for your business plan from a dollars and cents standpoint. Does it make financial sense to do this facility, and will you see a return on an investment from a business standpoint, not from an aesthetic architectural standpoint, but from a business standpoint? So it takes quite a lot of planning, and you're right, Han. They're beautiful when they're done, but at the same time, it could be very, 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 very costly.
Yeah, one second, Jim. We had opportunity to look at some of those for a potential client, and sometimes the only answer that we have for them is to leave it alone.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Don't get us wrong. There are some facilities that work and could be quite cool, and especially if you're dealing in historic issued areas, like, you know, whether it's, you know, some places in Connecticut or out on the eastern coast around the, you know, Lancaster. There's a lot of historical facilities all over the East Coast that maybe that's the only place you can build because there isn't anything else available to you. And you have to work through that. So, as always, if you'd like more information, please visit our website, www.hjtdesign.com, or you can contact Han or myself at 1-866-213-1268. We'll gladly answer your question. If we don't know the answer to that question, we'll do everything we can to find it. We're here to help. And just so you understand, when we say the review process of things like getting an opinion on whether I should buy this piece of property or that piece of property, or whether I should look at this facility as a lease, or whether we look at this facility as a buy, or should I buy something new, or should I build? All of that is done on a consulting basis for us. And most of the time, we do that as a courtesy to help guide you as the owner of your facility to move forward, knowing that we won't get every project that is out there done, but we get a large share of them because people develop a trust relationship with us, And they understand we're here for one reason and only one reason. That's to really help and move the practice of dental office design in, you know, forward, so that we really can do it better than what typically has been done before, so that everybody succeeds. Because when you succeed as the owner and your facility succeeds, we're going to succeed, because the majority of our business comes from referral. And we're glad, excited, and humbled by that, knowing that there are a lot of people out there that have worked with us before, and they're excited about to say that they'd recommend us. So we're thankful for that, and we look forward. That's why we get up every morning and why we do what we do, right, Hon?
We love what we do, still.
Exactly. Well, for that, good evening, and look forward to seeing you next week. Remember, next week's topic, who do I need on my project team? It will be an interesting one. You'll be surprised at how many people will be part of it.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Have a good evening. Till next time.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.